This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
The Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre presents Well, Well, Well on Joy, a show that's all about sex, health and well-being.
Joy, joy, joy.
Hello and welcome to Well, 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 brought to you live every Tuesday from midday till 1. My name's Jessie and I'm back after a bit of a holiday. I've been to the States for 6 weeks, but it's good to be back. And I'm joined today by the lovely Carlos and Tex. Thanks to Adam for the news and thank you to Chris for the morning show. So Carlos and Tex, how are we today?
Oh, excited to be on air with you again, Jessie. It's fantastic.
I know, it's been a while, hasn't it?
It has good times indeed.
It is great to be here, isn't it? And it's live.
I know. Only lovely to be here with you too.
Yeah.
At Well Well Well, we talk about topics that relate to the GLBTI community. We're all about sex, health and well-being.
Yes, and today we've got something pretty exciting going on. So, Carlos, could you please tell our listeners what we've got in store for them today?
Sure. Today we will be covering topics surrounding HIV and criminalization, including issues around disclosure dilemmas. We also have a very special guest, Paul Kidd. He has been an HIV activist for a long time.
Well, time out of mind.
Yeah, I know. and he'll be joining us later in the show.
Alrighty, so Tex, can you please tell us how we can get involved with the conversation if someone wanted to send a question in or get involved somehow?
Well, Jessie, there are a plethora of ways that people can get involved with us.
The list keeps growing, doesn't it?
We have facebook.com/wellwellwelljoy, or you can call Joy on 1300 JOY 949, or if you want to get in contact with us right here in the studio right now, you could send us an email on air at joy.org.au, or equally, if you want to get in contact with us via SMS, you could send a text to Tex 0427 JOY 949, or you can even tweet us at wellwellwelljoy.
The song coming is We Are by Chris Rose. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
But Jessie, before we go, I think we have a prize, don't we?
we do have a prize. Mm. Indeed.
Yeah, we do need to talk about this lovely prize.
We have a prize. Now, this is the Down and Dirty Calendar. It's now available. Photography by the amazing Steve Scalone. Nick Dimelopoulos from TrofX was in charge of the art direction and the design of the calendar. And we have one of these calendars to give away. It's a restricted calendar, which means it's not available for minors. So you need to be 18 plus or someone who doesn't work down a mine. And you can get the 2015 Down and Dirty Calendar by sending us an SMS 0427 JOY 949, or sending us an email on air at joy.org.au, and the first SMS or email that we get through will be the lucky winner of this sensational prize, the Down and Dirty Calendar 2015. Thanks to the Victorian AIDS Council.
Good afternoon, Paul. It's Jessie here. How are you today?
Hey, Jessie. Hi, Tex. Hi, Carlos.
Oh, hi there, Paul.
Hello, Paul.
It's good to have you here. Could you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and where you're from?
Sure. So I'm originally from Sydney. I spent most of my adult life up there and moved down to Melbourne about 10 years ago with my partner, who got a job down here. Love it down here. Now living out in beautiful central Victoria, where it's a little overcast.
Oh, great. Today, but would you say, from someone from Sydney, that Melbourne is better than Sydney? We always do have that rivalry, don't we?
I try not to pick favourites.
No, of course.
Melbourne has charms that Sydney cannot match.
For sure. Okay, great. Well, thanks for coming us, being with us over the phone today. We're going to be starting off the discussion around HIV and criminalisation.
Right.
So, Paul, you've been active with the HIV world for a long time. What are your motivations here today in the show talking about criminalisation?
This is an area of work that I've been interested in for quite a few years. I think it's a neglected area of work in the HIV sector in Australia. I think it's often been talked about, but it's something that people feel like it's a difficult nut to crack. So there hasn't been much action on this front for quite a long time. I've been involved with the HIV sector for quite a long time. I was the president of PLWHA Victoria, now Living Positive Victoria, for a few years. I was on the board of the VAC. I'm currently on the board of Hepatitis Victoria. Once I finished up my term as president there, I felt like I wanted to have a continuing role, and so I picked up this area of criminalisation.
Okay.
So we've been trying to move that forward for the last few years. We now have a working group. It's a joint VAC and Living Positive Victoria working group. We also have some involvement from the national agencies in that.
Okay. Well, actually, do you mind going into a little bit more detail about some of the work that you're doing as an HIV activist, part of the working group, as well as some of the other work that you're doing?
Yeah. There's a few things that the working group has been working on. One of the main focuses for us this year was running an event at the International AIDS Conference, which was a one-day satellite event on the subject of HIV criminalisation, not just here in Victoria or Australia, but around the world.
That was great.
An incredible day. We had some amazing speakers. We had a senator from Iowa in the US who talked about his involvement in changing the law there. We had a young guy who was sentenced to 25 years jail for having unprotected oral sex with someone without disclosure.
Oh, wow. And you managed to get him involved as well?
He and the people involved in that case have fought very hard, and I can now announce that he's actually had that case completely overturned.
That is really, really good news.
Awesome.
Yeah. But he was, you know, he was given a 25-year sentence and lifetime registration as a sex offender for something that was completely safe.
Yeah.
We also had people from Africa, from Uganda, where a nurse has recently been sentenced to jail for accidentally pin-pricking a baby who was, again, not infected with HIV, but she's been horribly treated.
Rosie
Nemaburu, and the Ugandan government is just on a terrible track trying to increase criminalisation, and that's something that's happening across Africa.
Mm.
But people from Scandinavia, where they're doing some... they've actually had a surprisingly bad history with HIV criminalisation, but they're doing some incredible work in turning that around now. And people from all around the world. It was an incredible day.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really good to hear about this. What about the other stuff that you were talking about, part of the working group?
Yeah, so we've been advocating for some time, without too much success so far, to try and implement a set of prosecutorial guidelines that we think it's an appropriate process by which the prosecutors would be able to divert people into the public health system rather than taking them through the court.
So let's start by discussing where we are in Victoria with regards to the Crimes Act, Section 19A. Tex, could you please explain to us exactly what 19A states?
Jesse, of course I can. 19A states under the Crimes Act that a person who intentionally causes another person to be infected with a very serious disease is guilty and can face a penalty of up to 25 years imprisonment. And it says that a very serious disease includes HIV. Now, I'm not sure if it includes HIV or if it is just HIV. Is that so, Paul?
It's just HIV.
Yeah.
This is a law that only deals with HIV.
Okay, so could you talk to us about when this was introduced and why, Paul?
Yeah, so Section 19A was introduced by the Kennett government in 1993. It was at a time when obviously the medical understanding around HIV was really different.
Mm.
And the rationale behind it was that I should also say there'd also been a number of cases of people using syringes in robberies and attacks.
So when you say syringes, using it as a weapon,
exactly. The blood-filled syringe, the so-called syringe bandit.
Okay.
So there was a concern that someone who was HIV positive and the kind of terrible kind of media story that was told was that, you know, people with HIV were desperate and they had nothing to live for.
Yeah.
And that they would do anything. Someone who was HIV positive could use a syringe to attack someone, and if that someone became HIV positive as a result, they would die, but they wouldn't die soon enough for the person who committed the attack to be convicted of murder. So they needed some other special special provision that would cover that situation. Now, that said, there has never been an attack in Victoria with a blood fill syringe by a person with HIV.
Yes, so there has never been an attack in Victoria.
All right.
That's right.
So it's a law that was brought in response to a hypothetical situation that had never occurred in Victoria and has never occurred since.
Okay. Do you think that Act 19A causes stigma and discrimination?
Look, absolutely. I think this is one of the real problems with this kind of law, is that it does drive HIV stigma in particular, because it presents people with HIV not as, you know, someone who happens to have an infection or a virus, but as a threat to the community. And we know that that's simply not the case in almost every person's case.
Absolutely.
So, Paul, just a question. How should we be dealing with cases where a person allegedly intentionally transmits HIV to another person? And just, you know, I imagine trying to keep the criminal system out of the equation.
Yeah. Look, Section 19A only deals with intentional transmission. So it only it doesn't deal with, you know, accidental transmission or reckless transmission. The reality is that no one has ever been proven in court to have intentionally infected anyone with HIV in Victoria, despite this law being in place for 21 years. That said, someone who did intentionally infect someone with HIV would have, you know, that's a crime of violence. It's a terrible crime. And there's really no question that if the evidence shows that that's what actually happened, that person should be subject to the full penalty of the criminal law. But that's not how Section 19A works in practice. What actually happens is that people who have not, who are accused of HIV exposure or of non-intentional transmission are threatened with Section 19A. The police use it as a way of encouraging people to provide them with a statement. It's used as a threat against people in order to encourage them to, you know, participate. You know, you have a law that has it as its purpose the criminalisation of something we would all agree is a crime. But what actually happens in practice is that it's used in unpredictable ways.
Yeah.
And that's a real driver of stigma. And stigma is such an important issue. Stigma
Absolutely.
Is what, you know, stigma is the most important issue in HIV today.
Could you say there's any experiences or have you witnessed any cases that you have seen stigma and discrimination with regards to HIV?
Look, absolutely. I've had the privilege of talking to and working with a number of people who've been subject to these kinds of prosecutions over the years. I can remember one case about 5 or 6 years ago, a young man who was accused by a sex partner of intentionally placing him at risk of HIV.
Mm-hmm.
He was charged. And he had his name and suburb published in the paper, which is what one of the things that happens if you're charged.
Oh, really?
So that man went back home to his apartment that night to find graffiti scrawled over his wall. He no longer felt safe in his own home.
Yeah.
He went out to a gay bar and was confronted by some people who he thought were his friends, who accused him of spreading HIV. You know, people see something printed in the paper and they think that there must be some truth in it.
Yeah.
So he suddenly found himself unable to stay in his own home. So he was sleeping in his car, unable to go out and visit people in a social environment without feeling threatened with under attack, facing very serious criminal charges, including a charge under Section 19A.
This is incredibly sad.
Now, all of those charges were dropped. All of those charges were dropped. That man was not convicted of anything.
Okay.
There was never an article in the paper that said that the charges were dropped. Okay. His life was ruined from the day they published his paper, his name in the paper.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why we really should reserve the use of the criminal law for cases that genuinely deserve it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, in terms of disclosure and do you think it's more apparent in the gay world, or does it happen in heterosexual couples as well when it comes to negotiation? Yeah. What do you think?
One of the things about the criminalisation of HIV is that it falls disproportionately on groups of people who are not representative of people living with HIV generally. So about half of the people who've been prosecuted for HIV-related criminal offences in Australia are heterosexual, whereas heterosexuals only make up a tiny minority of people with... actually, more than half of the people who've been prosecuted are heterosexual. And about 35% of people who've been prosecuted in Australia are African men. So it's a process that falls very disproportionately on, you know, African men. So that's an unfortunate reality about the way these laws work in practice. In terms of disclosure, I think these laws do act as a disincentive for people disclosing their HIV status.
Yeah.
I've met a guy a few years ago who told me that he had had sex with someone, and then after he finished, he realised the condom had broken. So he did the right thing. He said, look, I'm HIV positive. He hadn't disclosed previously. I'm HIV positive. We need to get you to the hospital to get you on PEP. That would be the right thing to do. The guy freaked out, left the place. The next thing that the guy that I was speaking to knew about it was the police turned up on his door.
Oh dear!
So he was reported to the police for disclosing his HIV status
and trying to do the right thing.
And trying to do the right thing for admitting that the condom had broken and getting the guy, you know, pointed in the right direction towards PEP. You know, he's reported to the police. You know, and that guy told me if the same thing happened tomorrow, I'll just keep my mouth shut.
Paul, can you talk about the Public Health and Wellbeing Act introduced in 2008? What is it?
So this is the replacement to the old Health Act. So it deals with a whole range of issues around public health.
Now, do you think it's a step in the right direction, even though, well, it's quite a while ago now?
Yeah. Look, the key thing around the Health Act for our discussion here is the way that it impacts on people with HIV. And under the Health Act, there is a process by which people who are accused or alleged to be placing other people at risk of HIV, there's a process that can be initiated in response to that. And we'll call that the public health process generally. Now, this is a really powerful process, and but it's also one that's designed to be minimal interventionist. So in the event that somebody is reported to the health department in those kinds of circumstances, and that report can come from anyone, including the police, there's a five-step process that gets initiated, and that starts off with interviewing and counselling people about their responsibilities, and it can be escalated through a series of steps, and it can get very powerful. Steps are available to the chief health officer in the event that they're necessary. So at the one end, you have people can be brought in for an interview and given information. The department staff that work on this may try and identify people's mental health issues that they may have, any substance abuse issues, those kinds of things, and will refer them towards treatment services and so forth. As the process steps up, if people don't change their behaviour appropriately, then there can be a letter of warning. There can then be what's called a public health order, which is a very serious legal instrument, and that public health order can require people to, for example, always disclose their HIV status or always practice safe sex or stay away from particular places such as sex on premises venues or beats or refrain from certain activities, stay off Grindr, those kinds of things. at the most extreme level, the chief health officer has the power to have people arrested and confined against their will, and she can have you locked up against your will for up to 6 months, and that can be extended every 6 months. Okay. Indefinitely.
So, continue.
It's a process that's incredibly powerful, but the good news is that it's also incredibly effective. So almost everybody who goes into that system is dealt with at the very minimal level. So, as you would imagine, most people who are confronted with an accusation of this kind are keen to stay out of trouble, and they can easily modify their behaviour. And it often, as is often the case, there may be other issues that are impacting on their ability to keep other people safe. So getting people into mental health treatment or helping people deal with drug and alcohol problems can be a big part of that.
Yeah. So since the introduction of this Public Health Act in 2008, do you think there has been a change in the views from the law enforcers and the police and people like that?
Yeah. I should say that even though the current Public Health and Wellbeing Act only dates from 2008, the processes that I'm describing existed under the previous Health Act as well, so they're not new. They've been around for quite a long period of time, and there are similar processes in every state and territory in Australia, although Victoria invented this process.
Okay.
In terms of what the law enforcement agencies understand around this, my impression has been that they are surprised to discover that such a process exists, that there's actually minimal understanding of it within within law enforcement. Certainly, we've met with prosecutors, and the prosecutors didn't know about this at all. Some police would know about it. The police in the sexual crimes squad certainly know about it.
Yeah.
But your average policeman on the beat wouldn't be aware of it. And this is an area that we think needs some work.
Yes.
Because we think it would be a really great result, not just for people with HIV, but also for the public well-being and for public health and for public safety, if we can stop pushing people through the criminal justice system and instead move them into this public health process.
Yes, absolutely.
Obviously a lot cheaper. It costs a lot of money to put somebody through a criminal process. It's much more effective. It happens completely in private, so people don't have their names published in the paper. It enables people to get their lives back on track and continue to be productive members of the community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, Paul, as you're aware, at the Victorian AIDS Council and Living Positive Victoria, there are two action steps we're pushing for before the Victorian state election on the 29th of November, which, of course, is coming up very quickly. The first is the repealing of Section 19A of the Crimes Act 1958, Victoria. The second, establishing protocols between police, public prosecutors and public health to ensure that alleged cases of HIV exposure or transmission are managed through the public health system and not through the criminal justice system. Were you involved in putting this together?
Certainly was. The good news is that both sides of politics have made some commitments in this area. The government has undertaken to amend Section 19A to make it non-discriminatory against HIV. We've got some issues with the language there. We're not too sure what they intend to do, and we haven't been able to get any detail from them. It won't happen before the election. There are only a couple more sitting days left. But we understand that they intend to do that in the next term of government if they're re-elected. The Labor Party has given us a promise that if they are elected, they will repeal Section 19A. On the prosecutorial guidelines side of things, both sides have told us that they will look at it. It will be able to continue to push for that. And we've had a good response from the prosecutors in terms of discussing that with them. So I think that's an achievable outcome.
That's great. That's really good news. It's definitely a right step in the right direction. I think that's all we've got time for today. Thank you so much, Paul, for joining us. We really appreciate the time you took.
I just want to plug a Living Positive Victoria event that's coming up.
Of course.
It's on the 12th of November. It deals with the 10 or 12 different areas in the joint election platform.
So okay.
It's, uh, at the PLC on Wednesday, the 12th of November at 6:30 in the evening. So I think that's a great event. If you're interested in some of these issues that we're pushing for in the context of the election, it'll be a good opportunity, and we'll have representatives of the political parties there so we can put the blowtorch to their belly.
Yep, that's great. So I'll just say that again. It's on the 12th of November at Positive Living Centre, and we'll hope to see you guys there.
And we've had a text which has come in, which is very gorgeous. Well, the text is from our good friend Buddy, who says, well said, Paul, about Paul Kidd, our guest, talking about HIV and criminalisation. Very informative. Good show. I guess that's to all of us. Thank you, Buddy. Nice to hear from you, darling.
And before we leave, we'd like to quickly mention one of our events coming up called Short and Girly with a Bit of Burly. This event's on Saturday, the 25th of October from 7:30 till 10:45. It's an all-star comedy gala which features some comedy legends such as Rachel Berger, Hannah Gadsby, Tom Ballard, and maybe even a couple of surprise guests.
And look, if you want tickets to the show, you can get them from Ticketmaster. They're $60 full, $54 concession plus booking fee. It's going to be an absolutely gorgeous night. I've seen Rachel Berger so many times, and Kel Wilson, Hannah Gadsby, etc. And it's nice to know that there's going to be a little bit of Burly there, so some boys will be playing as well. Adam Richards, always funny and a great friend of Joy. So yeah, make sure you can get involved. It's going to raise money for the Victorian AIDS Council, which I think is pretty gorgeous.
It's going to be a pretty fun night, apparently, Tex. Are you Indeed. Going to go yourself?
Oh, I'll be there. I don't think I wouldn't miss a short and girly.
With your bells on?
I'll be there with bells on. Just listen for the ringing in the background.
Ding, 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 absolutely. Ding, ding. Thanks so much for joining us today, guys. It was really good. It's my first show back after 6 weeks. It was so lovely to do this show with Carlos and Tex. We're part of the Well, Well, Well team from the Victorian AIDS Council, and you're listening to Joy 94.9. Join us next week for another exciting show.
That's right. Well, I just want to say a very special thank you to Marcelo, who won the prize, the 2015 Down and Dirty calendar, and to commiserations to Brent, who missed out. But Brent, if you keep on trying, you are sure to win prizes. Everybody wins prizes here on Joy. It's the greatest station in the nation. We'll be back next week.
Cheers.
Well, 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 bringing you all the up-to-date information on sexual health and well-being. Brought to you by the Victorian AIDS Council, Gay Men's Health Centre, on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.